Welcome to Let's Talk, brought to you live by the National Indigenous Radio Service, the only opportunity offered to the broader community to be informed on the issues and current affairs from a First Nations perspective. This is Bo Spearham with Let's Talk.
And good morning and welcome to Let's Talk. Before I go any further, I would like to acknowledge the traditional owners on whose land we are broadcasting from. I would like to pay my respects to the Yuggera and the Turrbal people. We also would like to pay respects to our elders and our elders of more recent arrivals. This is Let's Talk, and my guest on the show this morning, Aunty Nancy Bemaga. Just before we get into the interview, Aunt, could you tell us your name, your mob, and where you're from?
Yeah, sure, Bo. My name's Nancy Bemaga, as Bo was saying. My people are from Saibai Island. I always identify on my dad's side. So my mob up there are the Thabu and Samu clan of Saibai Island. My people, actually, majority of them now live on the Cape, Cape York, Bemaga, the community of Bemaga, which is named after my grandfather. And my language group there is Kalakau, yeah, up there in the Torres Strait.
Could you tell us a bit about the inquiry? But before that, how did you get involved in the inquiry and why it's so important?
Well, as you mentioned, I've worked for a long time in a shop called Aboriginal Creations, which was started way back. And it basically introduced and started the whole movement around the Indigenous retail and tourism sector. So back in the day, all our mob from that little shop started in Cherbourg as a curio shop, then it moved down to into Brisbane at William Street, then later at George Street, then after that was over at Elizabeth Street. So it's had a long history about the government of the day, back then Department of Native Affairs, wanted our communities to be self-sufficient, so they created all these little shops around those art centres as far up as Bemaga, Cape York, where I'm from, and all the way down to Cherbourg and here to Brisbane. And so Brisbane became like the wholesale and retailer of those all our beautiful artefacts and visual art. So, so it was very progressive, you know. It was already wholesaling out to internationally to UK, Europe and the US. And our people were very progressive, you know. They saw the opportunity there and they themselves were very active and, you know, in ways of, finding, you know, some, you know, as well as practicing the maintenance, the cultural maintenance of maintaining and making those implements, you know, and it was a wonderful way to maintain our, you know, those practices for men and women, you know, weaving and all that sort of stuff around, you know, that we do every day to serve for survival back in at that time and even today how we maintain it as terms of our cultural practices. So that shop, Aboriginal Creations, then moved, of course, into the, change with time to developing merchandise. And I started that in 1992 and was involved with a lot of artists at the time that were starting out. And I'm very proud to say a lot of the names of those artists, such as Brother Richard Bell, Vernon Archie, and all that mob from Lockhart River, and the Torres Strait Art Movement was starting at the time too. So it was very, very on the forefront of leading that in that sector, even before the western part of the state of WA and NT came into play. They were spending more time in the visual arts sector, but we were already making implements and visual arts. So, of course, as things happened, a lot of people then saw the opportunity there in terms of the tourism sector and started getting involved in that and started to distribute those arts and crafts and merchandise. And our people that were wholesaling at the time was, of course, Uncle Joe Skeen, Senior and Junior, of course, who I think is the only Aboriginal distributor of authentic stuff. And then Peter Mulcahy, including Michael Connolly, all these beautiful men that I worked with, through Aboriginal Creations. And I was And of course, we were very, proud, and we were just driving. The business was really thriving, you know, at that time, except for when the whole marketplace kind of changed and other people saw those opportunities and decided to, you know, jump on the bandwagon, so to speak. Mm-hmm. I've been talking about fake art since like 2000, and because of what the impact has had on our people, having to then withdraw from those marketplaces and not make or supply, because it's very crowded. The Indigenous retail tourism sector is very crowded. Estimated 80% of the products in there are, fake art. So that means that, you know, when you look at 80% and you look at how many, we're only getting 20% of the industry, which is our industry, you know. Mm. What are we doing about it? You know, how are we going to progress and claim that back? And make income from our creativity in producing these beautiful artifacts, and so that's a sector that's been taken over with fake art, and that's a big concern.
When you had the shop front open, you worked with mob from all across Queensland.
That's right.
You know, what opportunity did this create? You know, our mob.
Well, that was, financially independent, being able to have pay for your roof over your head, put food on the table, pay the rent. And that was dominated by our people and through that shop, because the shop just led the whole way, you know. It was, as I mentioned, on the very forefront of the whole movement here in Queensland. Not only that, but also launching all those well-known artists, as I just mentioned. Mm-hmm. And then there was kind of like that breakdown because I think mainly because that platform's not there anymore. That was there because that was about developing and that new marketplace and, having to work with those suppliers to be competitive in the marketplace and bringing out that first kind of merchandising here in Queensland in terms of breaking into the tourist industry. So as I said before, not long after that, the other retailers, some of them might have been authentic, I don't know, in terms mm-hmm. of, the stuff that they had, but I'm just saying that a lot of people saw that opportunity and decided to supply, to meet the demand.
How much has that affected our industry, the Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander art industry?
First, it's kind of like that because that shop was like the main point. People could walk in there and buy the products. And they could also, tourists would used to come into the store and, then being able to meet us mob, one-on-one with the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people that were employed through those years. And a lot of those people have passed on. But, you'll see a lot of that that documented within the Brisbane Black Book. I don't know whether you've seen that, Bo, but a fantastic
book.
Yeah, so there's a story in there about Aboriginal creations. And now what's happened is it's the outlets. So a lot of our people, you can only buy that authentic product now at festivals. If you're going to, say, Kaya for Gama or something, might be some of our people that are selling in the marketplace, in local markets. But it's very competitive because the stuff is cheaper, because it's cheaper to produce it overseas, and then it comes back, in a couple of, cents to, and then it impacts on the tourists because they see that, and these products that look really, looks like an authentic product, but it's not. And they, of course, go ahead and buy it. But, it's about the ethical practices of some of the retailers. But, of course, there are people where they are, some of the retail shops do have a merchandise range where there's royalties going back to our people. But not handmade stuff. You will not see that in there. You'd be lucky to. I've only seen, Joe Skeen Jr. stuff in those stores, in those souvenir stores, and there's nobody else's in there. So it's kind of like really shut out our people, and Joe was, I guess, being really smart, got really on that bandwagon really quickly and took advantage of that because being the only Indigenous distributor. of the product, so we can go nationally as opposed to being here in just in one spot. So we opened up his marketplace.
This is Bose Birram with Let's Talk.
And my guest on the show this morning, Honey Nancy Bemagar. For our listeners, how can they identify and what is fake Aboriginal art?
Well, it's very hard to tell. If you go into the shops, I would be looking at the if there's any tags on there that are like authenticity tags of where the products are made. But I would also be questioning people with, if they see any of our people, even the information centres, where to buy authentic art. I wouldn't even be sending them down there in any mall, I guess, for wherever our stuff is. I'd be sending them to like the museum shops or the gallery shops where you're more likely to buy authentic product, or go to the local festivals or Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander festivals where you can buy authentic stuff, and that's the only time you'll meet our people face to face and get that whole experience.
How much is fake Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander art industry? How much money do they generate?
Oh my God. Look, I couldn't tell you this right now, but everything so information is available through the Indigenous Art Code is one of those places, or Arts Law, or mm-hmm. Artists in the Black. All these agencies that are working with our people, they have all that information there. And in terms of, the sector, if you're looking at what's authentic and what's not authentic. Mm-hmm. But definitely, as I was saying, a lot of our people have now kind of like either gone into business themselves, have a retail shop, or gone to the actually sell their stuff at local markets, but they're just about competing with all the other people out there.
Yeah.
Or the best place is our festivals, at Musgrave Park there. It was good to see, a few times I've been out there, is to see a lot of our young people getting out there, getting their lovely shirts printed and all that sort of stuff. But just ensuring that they themselves are, putting that authenticity label that they're, identifying who they are, that's on that particular product. Otherwise, it's very hard to see where it's actually come from if they hadn't identified themselves. But of course, you can't miss them, though. If you go there to Musgrave Park, you can get our mob there selling their stuff, and it's so deadly, to see that. But you won't see it any other time, unless you go into there's no options for the tourists to go to. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like we really need to look at how we're marketing ourselves, in order to make ourselves stand out for the tourists, so the tourists can see, oh, okay, this is an authentic product. So it's about your packaging and how you're marketing your product, and making it that it is competitive as well in priced, and, really know how you can, look at how, things like if they're traveling internationally, the product needs to be small, otherwise they're going to be sending stuff home. So really know that marketplace, who you're selling your product to. Especially now we know there's a lot of people that are going to be here, of course, for the Comm Games, and Brisbane is also one of the satellite cities, as you probably heard, and Townsville and Cairns along with that. And we really need to help our people get out there and promote them, in terms of where you can buy their products.
You're working with various different other Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people around the country to fight against fake art, Aboriginal industry. Could you tell us a bit about that and the submissions? They close November 3rd?
That's right. That's correct. So on the 3rd of November is the last date for the submissions to go in. I would encourage you to go to www.aph.gov.au/inauthenticart, or alternatively, get onto Facebook. On Facebook, go to Arts Front. Arts Front has a very simple electronic form, only 5 questions that you can fill out. Get somebody to help you. You can get together as a group and, put in a submission as an organization, as an individual, as a collective. There we need as many submissions in there. We've got to stop this. Or contact myself. My email is nancy@blackdrumproductions.com.au. I'm more than happy to also to help you in terms of putting in a submission. We could be contacted direct also through Arts Front on Facebook. So check out the video link on there. I'm there on there talking about it, and other people from across from WA as well, all our other brothers over there that are talking about the fake art submissions. We'd really encourage, so of course this applies to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone that's investing in fine Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander art, the high-end market, to the people that are on the ground that are selling their artifacts and their merchandise, this affects this tourism sector. It's important for us to support our people on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
It's things like out there in those places where you have the basic card. This is another way for our people to generate income, so they don't have to be relying on their basic card. Let's help our people on the ground.
Mm.
We need to all come together, us Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people and non-Aboriginal people. So anyone that's got a gallery, a retail shop, even if you just believe in having an authentic art piece up on your wall, not something that's made somewhere else. Buying that boomerang, you want an authentic boomerang, clapsticks, artifacts, all the supporter artifacts makers. This is what our culture is about, maintaining and practicing our culture. And you can help us by in terms of keeping our people employed, but also being proud Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people that we're practicing our culture in making our artifacts and our implements.
I just want to say thank you for joining us on Let's Talk this morning, and would love to catch up with you as well within the future to talk a bit more about the fake art inquiry.
Look, Bo, thank you so much for having me, and just make sure you have also put in a submission.
Yes.
Yes. Thank you, Esso.
You are listening to Let's Talk. I'm your host, Bo Spearham. You can catch Let's Talk every Monday to Friday from 9 a.m. to 10 p.m. right here on 98.9 FM.
You've been tuned to Let's Talk, highlighting the injustice from community to country, suburb to city, with a multitude of hosts, Bo Spearham, Carver Watson and Chelsea Bond. Weekday mornings from 9 till 10, it's Let's Talk, welcoming the continued sovereignty of all First Nations peoples right across the country.